Hello and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 398. My name is Melanie, and today we are beginning the sort of Neo Connectivity Game Club, where each of our panelists gets the chance to select one game of any franchise. We're not doing like the full franchises like before, and we're going to force it upon each other. And I thought that this was going to be kind of a fun idea while we're in this period where Neil and John are a little, you know, they're busy.
Burnt out.
Things are slow. There's a little bit of burnout. So instead, we've got a new cast featuring with me. We've got Neil Ronahan.
Hey, long time. Love the show.
John Meriden.
Howdy, everybody.
And Alex DeFritis.
I'm here.
And so our first game was my selection. And today we are discussing Outer Wilds, not The Outer Worlds. That's a different video game which came out in the same year, very close together. And they are very frequently confused for each other.
Did you know the fun fact of how the writer of The Outer Wilds then went to work on The Outer Worlds DLC?
Oh, yeah, I did know that. That's very funny. It's extremely funny. So, we are discussing Outer Wilds, and I'm going to give a warning up front. Fans of this game will strongly, strongly recommend that you go in knowing absolutely nothing. And, like, when I say that, I mean you don't even know the basic game loop. I think that's a little extreme, but it is widely agreed that that is the quote unquote correct opinion. So if you would like to get the purest experience possible, turn off the podcast now and go play it. We'll be waiting for you. Otherwise, we're going to start out with sort of a lighter details section where we're not talking too much about specifics, no real story details, anything about that. And then we're going to give you a warning when we're about to go into full spoilers mode. So before we get started, for anyone that maybe wants to try to get that pure experience, just really quick, what's our like 5-word review? I think this game is incredible. One of my favorite games ever made. Neil?
I think this game is immaculately designed, a very cool puzzle box loop that, because of the anxiety that I have over time limits in video games and some kind of realizing that I think I have a little bit of anxiety of like drifting in space in video games, which this game also elicited. It's a game that I think I respect more than I love, because I do like, I'm fascinated by the design. We'll probably reference it a couple times, but I watched the NoClip documentary about The Outer Wilds this week, and like, it's really like just how they built this game is incredible. It is deserved of all the praise it got from a design perspective, because there's nothing quite like it. But I think ultimately it's not totally my bag. A lot longer than a 5-word review, but but I just feel like I need the context, because like, I think this game is really neat. It just is not gonna go down in a top 10 list for me. Mm-hmm.
Alex,
I think if you can stick it out for the first 5 hours, then you will have a absolutely wonderful last 15 hours of playing this game. I'm probably like Neil in that I think that the stuff I appreciate and enjoy about it is more like a respect rather than a I fell in love with it personally. Up until when it all comes together, and then when that happens, it really stuck with me, and it's a game that I haven't stopped thinking about for the past couple of weeks. So I think it's well worth playing.
John?
I think that I am the target audience of this game. I think this is just kind of a Myst style adventure game, but in space. I will echo Neil's anxiety thing. You mentioned drifting in space. I have a deep-rooted fear of the ocean and any large creature that lives in it, and I have never had a game that didn't take place in the ocean trigger that anxiety as much as this game did. I was terrified for large portions of this game, but I loved the entire thing. Even playing the Switch version didn't damper the experience. It just needed to be rebooted a couple times.
Did you play primarily handheld or on TV?
Probably slightly leaning toward handheld, but pretty 50-50.
And I'm curious, I mean, I know, I feel like, John, you playing the Switch version is probably the most, like, whoa. I played on PS5. I don't know what, Melanie, you and Alex played on.
I was PS5.
I played on PC.
Ooh, elitist.
I have it on PC because eventually I'm going to, like, do mods and stuff, but I've only played it on PlayStation so far.
I did actually, I did play it briefly on Xbox around when it first launched.
It was a Game Pass day one game, right?
Yeah. I think we're starting to, like, get into, like, the higher level details stuff now. So just like that quick warning there.
That was now everybody leave. We're going to talk about this game. We don't want
not full spoilers yet, but some details.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, I want to say it might have been 2020 when I actually played it, because I think this game came out spring 2019, I think.
Let me check.
2019 for sure. I don't remember exactly when.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's May of 2019.
All right. Good. Spring. Right on target. But I know it was on Game Pass. And at some point I booted it up, had heard the hype, was probably around when it won some awards around that time. But I played it late at night and was just in the town and was kind of like, where's this going? And like fell asleep and then never went back to it until last month.
So until now, Neil's opinion of Outer Wilds is that it's a game where you wander around a small town. I don't really get the hype, but you know, but it, whatever.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
Like,
I mean, like, it was, and like, I definitely do have the memory of, like, I probably played it spring 2020, where it was just that thing. Like, I got deep into Sea of Thieves at the time. It was like I was just looking for something to busy my mind. And honestly, I made the right decision. I think playing this game in spring 2020 would have just had me crying and curled up into a ball.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
So I actually I'll save that detail for later. Actually, it has to do with the ending, I think. But like the context in which I played it was very particular. But that beginning area honestly, I think does a great job of setting a tone for everything, because it's definitely like the most dialogue heavy part of the game. There's never really a point where you're like with characters that often again.
Yeah.
But just kind of the emotions that it has in it of like, first of all, like some really funny lines about how clearly terrible this space program is. My favorite one being that Feldspar was the first Hearthian intentionally launched into space.
Mm-hmm. Well, when your planet's that small, it's pretty easy to accidentally launch things.
The writing is very good. Like throughout it's the entire game, it's so thoughtful, character driven, despite being very technical at times.
Mm-hmm. It's really, really good at striking such a perfect balance of conveying emotion, building up the world, diving into the science, driving the mystery. Every part of it is just so immaculately written. And that's that alongside with the exploration. Like, I love the exploration and how open it is, how everyone goes through the game in their own different path, but the combining that with all of the writing being as good is what makes this game so special to me, because it just kind of it hits on every kind of feeling that I would want to have out of it. And there are lines in this game that I think of so often, just because of how they resonate with me. And that beginning section in the town is a big part of that, because it kind of really does get you excited to be going into space.
Yeah, they bring it up in that NoClip document. We're just going to all be talking about the NoClip documentary this entire time.
It's
this,
very good
this
documentary.
Episode is just a review of the NoClip documentary. Yeah. But the writer brings it up in that, where she's talking about how it's like, it's a game that has a lot of lore, and yet they never really lore dump on you. Mm-hmm. You learn the lore through conversation, like it, or very conversational tone writing, which I think is great. As somebody who likes a lot of dense lore in a game, I will occasionally open up some log in a game and just go, I don't have time for this right now. And in Outer Wilds, that's not really an option. Like you need to invest in it, and they do a very good job of never drowning you, despite giving you a lot of it.
And in fact, I believe the default settings, you can change this in the settings, but the default settings is that time doesn't pause when you're in dialogue. It keeps going.
So
I turned that off.
Yeah,
I did too. But it's what's the default experience? What are they expecting from you?
I want to say this could be wrong. Maybe I just adjusted it right away. I know that character dialogue keeps going, but I think the times where you're like reading something that's written, I think it freezes time there by default. I could be wrong, but that's my memory.
I do think so.
Because if you have it paused during dialogue, it actually freezes animations, because it's like that definitely wasn't how it was meant to be done.
I left dialogue with time going forward while talking to people for a while, but eventually got to the point where I'm like, the animation is very nice. However, I don't like having to feel like I need to read fast to optimize.
I think those are some good, like, little bit accessibility settings.
True.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm glad that they're there as someone with a little bit of, like, time limit video game anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
Although what I needed was a song of double time.
There kind of is that. You can doze off at fireplaces.
Yeah.
Campfires. It's not perfect. But it does help a lot, I think, sometimes.
I never did that. Does that just fast forward like in small increments, or does it?
Yeah, it will. Basically what it does is, like, your character goes to sleep, they close their eyes, so it's, you know, the screen's completely black, and then it puts up a timer on screen to show that time is moving much faster.
Oh, okay.
And it's something that was actually patched in later. So it's like, it's not the perfect solution because it wasn't really meant to be there from the start, but they did eventually add that in so that it's a little easier when you're waiting for stuff to happen.
I could see there being, there are certain planets where, like, it takes a while for you to get access to things at the beginning, while you're waiting for time to pass. So I can see where that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Though I don't think there is a campfire on the planet that I'm thinking of that I wound up waiting for a long time at multiple times.
Ember Twin?
Ash Twin.
Yeah.
Ember Twin, you want to go really fast right away. Ash Twin is the one where you're waiting for sand to leave.
Yep. Yep.
One, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what you mean. And for that one, I sat at the campfire on Ember Twin.
Yep. That's what I did too.
Yeah.
No, I sat in my spaceship with it aimed exactly where I knew the thing I was going to need to go to would be, and just waited.
That, I didn't quite do it that way, but it was very similar, where it was kind of like, all right, I got to get here soon-ish, but I can take my time.
Melanie knows that I struggled a little bit with a late game thing on Ash Twin, and was there for longer than I needed to be.
I went far too many times to the Sunless City. I hate Ember Twin.
Ember Twin stressed me out a little bit.
Are we kind of getting ready to, like, start talking about real details? I would say.
I mean, whenever. I guess I can stay being vague for a bit if you want.
I mean, in just a broad way with this game, but it is very unique in the whole, like, you're not powering up, you're leveling up with information. Once again, it comes back to the idea that regardless of where I stand on, like, my personal, like, I think it was good. It's probably not something I'm going to, you know, I will tell people, like, if you would be interested in this, go play it. But I'm not going to go stand out there and probably be a big zealot for it. But it's just the intricacy of the design and how smart it is in the way that exploration is the driving force, and it does such a good job of, one, teaching you, as we talked about in that opening town. I think that's just a very good way of not having a time limit on that initial walk through the town, having it be a very, like, oh, go here, talk to that person. I think that was pointed out in the review of the Noclip documentary that we're talking about now. was a writer, Kelsey Beecham, talking about how when you talk to I'm blanking on the dude's name that you talked to in the beginning because I only talked to him once.
Oh, the guy that gives you the launch codes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hornfels.
Like, there was a deliberate choice there of that. At first, it was going to be like Hornfels was going to give you like, oh, like, go to this specific spot. Or like, you know, you could ask for a hint and you'd get a hint in a direction. But instead, Hornfels is like, hey, like, what do you want to do while you're out there? And you just have a list of things that you can reply that then kind of give you a little bit of a tease and a hint of where to go. And they do a really good job of communicating of like, yeah, go to this first place, look around, and then start to follow the threads.
It also really puts the agency in your hands, too, because it's like you're not being told what to do. You are being prompted to decide. And I think that that makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Do y'all remember where you went
first? I do.
I went to Addle Rock first.
Same. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That is the Kakariko village in Breath of the Wild where they are trying to send you first.
Yeah. I went straight to the probe cannon because it's the first thing you see when you wake up. And I was like, what is going on
here? I went to Brittle Hollow because the volcano moon caught my eyes. Probe cannon was like round two. And then round three was well, I'll actually save that because we're not technically in deep spoiler territory.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I did go from the Addle Rock to kind of following the thread of going to Dark Bramble. I spent like 2 hours there.
I went to the Addle Rock so late. I think it was the last planet I went to.
I didn't notice it. Like, because if you're not quite in the right point in the orbit when you take off, it's not necessarily going to be right. Like, it might be on the opposite side of the planet from you. So, yeah, I didn't even notice it was there for a long time.
Is there any, like, pertinent information on Addle Rock?
A little. There can be. It's stuff that that if you go elsewhere, you're probably going to learn somewhere else first.
Yeah.
But it does start to prompt you about some of the bigger mysteries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does talk, like, I remember. It kind of starts talking more about Nomai stuff. And I do think I think that's where you get the hint to start to find the dude who's in Dark Bramble.
Mm-hmm. Isn't.
I think that
the Dark Bramble guy is. Well, there might be multiple hints. There's one on the starting planet.
I recall in that initial thing where I wound up in Dark Bramble, I went to Addle Rock, had a hint that pointed me back to the starting planet, where then that is, you know, doing the thing to kind of connect it more to Dark Bramble. I think I got a hint
because we're a little short on time. I want to say before we have to start over, to just comment real quick on what Neil was saying about how all the progress is information. That is something that has really stuck with me about this game, both for better and a little bit for worse, because this game has no progression other than what you have discovered. All of the progression is just what you as the player understand about it. And I think that is something that is really magical about it. Because that puts all of the impetus for it into you, where you're just over and over again feeling like, oh, I could have done this the whole time. Like, you're not changing anything, really.
Right.
And that's where that gets a little bit of a bummer for me, is that also kind of means the game is unreplayable. I didn't replay it for this because how could you?
So I don't know if I'd say it's unreplayable. It's just you can't recapture that first experience. I remember I forget what game it was that I was talking to a friend of mine, and it was the kind of thing where they were just like, oh, I'm jealous of you, I wish I could just like kind of forget it, because I feel like that sense of wowing for a lot of games, like even something I feel like 3D Mario game, I feel like it might have been a 3D Mario game that person made a comment to me or something about, but like Super Mario Galaxy, I don't think it. I think Outer Wilds is a harder game to replay than Super Mario Galaxy, but that is a game where, like, it is kind of the like, oh wow, look at what they're doing with like the planet. I did not purposefully pick the Mario game that has you going on planets.
Planetoids.
Yeah,
but like, there's a certain sense of wonder in Super Mario Galaxy and even Odyssey that when you play it a second time, that like weird Dark Souls dragon in Mario Odyssey does not hit the same time, twice.
I think that's definitely true of like pretty much every video game to some extent. This one, though, it's like I'm never going to forget just how to go straight to the ending. I'm never going to forget the immediate steps.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I agree with, I mean, that's, Melanie, I desperately need you to play Myst. Because that
I probably will someday.
That has a
next round of this game club.
I can walk from the intro of Myst to the end credits in 2 minutes. And I can't not know how to do that anymore. That's only something that happens once. But it's the same thing. You don't get items in that game, you just learn.
Yep.
And then eventually you know enough to finish it.
And that's like where this game kind of hurts a little bit for me, is that like, it's just, I want to play it more and you just can't.
Yes, 100%. I will say they remade Myst and built in randomizers for a bunch of it. That helps. It's not the same, but it helps.
Give it time. Give it time. Outer Wilds will do that stuff. Like that is, I mean, I hate being like, oh, they should have a roguelike mode, but like, maybe they should have a roguelike.
It's getting added to the Archipelago randomizer.
Oh, weird. Okay. But,
okay. So we started to talk a little bit about details already, but I think it's about time we go all in. So I'm gonna say outright for everyone still listening, if you have not played this game yet, I strongly recommend that right here is where you turn off the podcast and go do so, because we're going to just open the door, release the floodgates, and start to talk about, you know, puzzle solutions, story details, everything. Hello and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 398. My name is Melanie and today we are here with a spoiler-filled discussion on Outer Wilds for the Connectivity Game Club. With me today is Neil Ronahan.
Hello, I'm ready to talk about this for the first time with all you.
John Meriden.
Y'all, I think we died.
And Alex DeFreitas.
Where did these launch codes come from?
What happened to the sun?
No, the sun looks fine. It's right up there. See? No problem.
Definitely not blue.
No problem at all.
Just don't look up. Just don't look up, everybody. Don't look
up. What's up with all the supernovas?
Okay, so did you guys talk to Slate at all and the different loops, the guy right at the start?
Yes.
Yes.
Early on, but it's something that I'm always bummed out about, that like I did not really revisit the opening area at all. Mm-hmm.
I got
for the most part, there's not a lot to find there after the first loop, but like Slate keeps adding in new dialogue as stuff happens. And there's like one point where you could be like, hey, yo, you know the ship's like a death trap? And Slate's just like, I mean, it's fine, it's not that bad. And then you'll say, hey, the sun's going to explode. And Slate's like, oh, yeah, I think I read that at the museum. Good thing we don't have to worry about that. That'll be like 100 million years from now.
I do like the one that I assume I didn't know for sure, but I assume it's once you have autopiloted into the sun, where you can tell him, hey, your autopilot flew me into the sun.
Yeah, I think what he says is, had a weird dream, huh?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, in a previous life, my third loop, because I saw the cannon the second time. The third time I was like, I think I can catch that little blue dot.
I did the exact same thing.
I followed the probe for the entire thing, and I was like, this is going to lead somewhere. It leads nowhere.
Yep.
But I had a cool moment during that where I'm out way, 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 way far away from anything, because it'll just let you keep going. Mm-hmm. And I turned around and was playing with my signal scope, and because I'm so far away, when I turned on the Outer Wilds radio, I just got every single Explorer's music at the same time. and it's all like synced up, right? Like they're all playing the same song.
Yeah.
And it was really neat.
doing that is an achievement on platforms that have achievements.
For me, it was only an achievement for myself.
An achievement for your soul.
And that's all I needed, because Switch is a more pure achievement experience.
That's what Mr. Nintendo intended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't realize that, like, I never had the opportunity to realize that they were all, like, synced up playing the same song until the ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, same here.
I thought about it during the ending, because I was like, oh, this probably would be more magical if I hadn't stumbled into it, but I enjoyed stumbling into it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a neat little moment.
Yeah, I don't think it really matters if you find things exactly where they're intended to be.
Yeah.
I think it matters that you have your own way of discovering them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big part of, like, with the probe cannon, for example, of, like, eventually you're going to notice that, like, hey, even though everything else in this loop is completely identical, it's firing in different directions.
Yeah, I think there's a Slack message from me to you where I go, mm-hmm. why did the probe cannon fire a different way that time? Because it took yep. me a few loops to notice.
And, like, just slowly unraveling everything about, like, what's going on with the Ash Twin project and everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, just the slow buildup of information until you have the full picture. It's so cool going through all that. That and the Quantum Moon mystery of yeah. just, like, yeah. getting to the Quantum Moon.
That's something the NoClip documentary didn't say a single gosh dang word about, was the Quantum Moon.
Oh, yeah.
Which I definitely thought, okay, when I got to the Quantum Moon, I'm like, this is endgame. I don't think I had found any of, like you referred to the Melanie as, like, the three kind of big discoveries that you need to, like, mm-hmm. do the game. And so I got to the Quantum Moon and was like, this is it. This is the goal. It's not.
Yeah. So after I said that, I realized that you could really easily misinterpret what I said as, like, the three quantum trials.
And that was not how I interpreted it. It was just that, like, the moon seemed so important. Like, every I kept finding references to it. It was this elusive thing that was, like, yeah. you know, very difficult to do it. You kind of had to go through these trials to, like, understand how to get to it.
So it's not mandatory, but I personally do hold a high importance to the Quantum Moon. Number one, because the conversation with Solanum mm-hmm. is my favorite part of the game.
It's cool. Yeah. Like, that conversation is cool mechanically, how it works. Like,
yeah,
because you are having a conversation with someone who can't understand you.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I love her line when you ask about her and yourself. And mm-hmm. she says what she says. I think about this so often. We don't seem to have much in common, you and I. Still, though, this meeting seems significant. I hope that I can consider you a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a strong moment to me.
Yeah, I loved, like, because you get presented with this, you know, slab of this rock with the different icons on it that you can give to them and they'll compare them. Mm-hmm. And my initial thing was like, okay, I have me and them, and then I have these topics. And that moment of realization where I can go, oh, I can ask them about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also, like, combine, like, I can ask about the topics to each other. And then I'm like, okay, I have to mathematically go through this and ask every possible combination of things to yeah. this person.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Quantum Moon is awesome. It is. If I have to, I mean, I don't have a ton of critiques of this game, but if I did have, like, it is one area where I would be like, I wish that it was, I think I wish it was part of the mainline story.
That's where it's not mandatory, so to speak. I mean, nothing's yeah. really mandatory, but it doesn't give you any direct information that you need to finish the game.
No.
But I think that if you're not already on the path to trying to get to the eye, it's the moment where it plants the idea in your head of how getting to the eye is important.
Yeah, and I think for me, the problem I had was that, like, eventually I asked you directly, like, is this plot critical? Like, should mm-hmm. I be, am I missing something here? Because for me, I got there and I felt you can see the reflection of the eye or whatever they call it up above.
Okay, so that I actually, I went back to that conversation myself to reread the dialogue. And I'm sorry to say, I think you misinterpreted it. Were you talking about the thing in the sky?
Mm-hmm.
So the reflection of the eye is the Quantum Moon.
And I understood that by the end of the game. But in the moment, it's because the what's the character's name?
Solanum.
Solanum. They reference, they have something where they say, like, you can see up above us. Like, they reference the vortex in the sky. And so in my head, I'm like, I need to get into that. I don't remember the exact dialogue. And there's even, like, if you jump into it, it spits you out in, like, a different version of the quantum moon. But if you take a photo of it to quantum lock it and then jump into it, it spits you back out on the same version of the quantum moon. I'm like, okay, so I can engage with this thing. Like, it has mechanics. So in my head, I was like, this is clearly something I need to be interacting with.
I'm looking at the dialogue now, and I think it is a badly phrased line, I would say.
Sure.
It's we can see the quantum moon's reflection of the eye in the sky above us. And I think...
Yes, that's the line I'm thinking of, yeah.
I think the way it's meant to be interpreted is we can see the quantum moon's reflection of, comma, the eye in the sky above us.
Yes. I think that is correct. At the time, that is not how I took.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. Yeah. I think that is completely fair. That is not, that's not how I would have phrased that line, I would say.
Yeah. So it's still, it's an awesome part of the game. And it's not that I don't like it. I love it. And I wish that it was, I wish that it was more important to the game. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to see them do more with it. Also, does anything interesting happen if the world ends while you're on the quantum moon that's in orbit around the eye?
So I believe actually the time stops while you're on the quantum moon because
like Solanum's alive.
That kind of makes sense. Yeah.
It can end if you're on the quantum moon, not around the eye.
Yeah.
Did happen to me.
Yeah, because of the way that it works while it's at the eye and how, like, Solanum is only alive when the moon is at the eye and she's dead on all other versions.
Right, it's, like, outside of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of a neat detail. And all of the quantum stuff that's going on, I think, is really cool. I think that they took this piece, like, in real life, everyone talks about quantum physics as, like, the weirdest shit that no one understands. And it's, that's true. No one really understands it. That's the point of it. But I think that this game really took the essence of quantum mechanics, made them make sense in a way that we could engage with, and then used it to make some of the most interesting stuff going on in the game.
Yeah.
And it still has that mystery of something that, like, I can't fully comprehend, but yeah, I am
like, it's unexplainable.
With. Yeah. And then that mystery of the eye is, I mean, the quantum moon is that moment where, I mean, I agree with John that it would be nice if it, like, tied in more to the plot and to how you get to the ending. But I feel like it's the most thematically cohesive part with the ending is the quantum moon, because, like, the Ash Twin project doesn't really, like, mean much to how everything concludes, but the quantum moon gives you an idea of how, like, vast and how unknowable the eye is, and prepares your mind for what that conclusion is going to be.
I feel like there's a part where, like, the quantum moon is, like, the theory and the Ash Twin project is the execution.
Yeah. I do like that, like, it was a cool moment. If you have done the quantum moon and then you get to the ending and you get to the eye, and so you're standing on the surface of it, and, like, because you have been to the quantum moon, you recognize where you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's a cool, like, it makes a nice little foreshadowing for the ending, which I think is really cool.
So I am speaking of the ending, I did stumble into when you take the core out. And you die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It ends. Are there any other moments like that? Because
there's a bunch.
The beginning of the game before you enter the loop, if you die, then ends.
Yeah, if you die in the before sinking with the Nomai statue, then it just rolls credits and sends you back to the title screen.
Yeah.
And actually, John, I was wrong. Time does pass while you're at the sixth location. And actually, there is a secret bad ending if you turn off the Ash Twin project and then go to the sixth location And then when the supernova happens, the you get like a little bad ending that basically implies like you are now in the same state as Solanum, where you're only alive at the sixth location.
Oh, that. OK, I was going to complain about it not making sense that it still moved, but that is actually a good.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the only bad ending, I think it's the same one, Neil, that you mentioned, where the Ash Twin was the last of the big three things that I solved. And I knew exactly, like, I saw that core and was like, I know exactly what to do. But mm-hmm. I'm at like the end of a loop. I'm just going to end it real quick. But I brought the core with me, not thinking about it, because I was just picking it up to make sure I could bring it out with me. And then flew into the sun, and then the game ended. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that's not what I was trying to do.
Okay, so there are actually a couple of quote unquote bad endings depending on like what you do when you remove the core from the Ash Twin project, with one of them being a little different. And this was the one that I tried to hint at for you guys. So, you know, the mechanics of the Ash Twin project is that it's your memories being sent back in time, not you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can get an alternate bad ending if you jump into the black hole so that you physically go back in time. And then like the loop will restart and you wake up on Timberhearth, and then you check your map and it's pointing to like your current location in two different places, one of which is at the Ash Twin project. And you can go there and have a conversation with yourself.
That's really funny. That's really funny.
If at the end of the loop you don't jump into the black hole to close the loop, then it breaks space time, and that's a bad ending.
No way.
I have to imagine they must have just sat around being like, okay, how could people break this? Like we've set up this intricate this setup. How can people break it in a way that would make it no longer make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Which I like.
One thing that I also wanted to ask about with regards to like how the story plays out, and depending on the order you do things in, and like kind of the assumptions that you make, this might not even be something that registered with you. But what a lot of the experience that a lot of people have with the story is that they spend most of the time believing that the end of the game is stopping the supernova. And then they get to the sun station and it spells out right there that the sun is at the end of its natural life. Like nothing is causing this supernova. It's just the sun's life is over. There's nothing you can do about it. And like, did you guys kind of have that moment?
Yeah, because I went and did all of the comet stuff, which very clearly sets up, hey, this thing is like, because I knew the comet goes into the sun. And it has this stuff in it that's going to, that will explode. So to me, it was one of my early thoughts was, oh, maybe there's a way to stop the comet or divert the comet. And that I didn't get into the sun station until pretty late.
Yeah.
But even by that point, I was already pretty invested in the eye. Like, mm-hmm. like I thought maybe that the eye would factor into avoiding the sun blowing up, but I was definitely more invested in the eye is clearly the thing.
Yeah. That's where I was at.
That
too.
Was, I will say this is where even the tiniest bit of knowledge can impact. I knew that the DLC was called Echoes of the Eye.
Sure, that makes sense.
So like when I heard the eye, I was like, oh, that's probably important. I did have the same like little bit of obsession with the comet for a while. I like had one of those aha moments where it's just like, oh fuck, the sun melts the ice. And like, yeah, like that, I did try a little bit to divert it and then wind up getting, you know, diverted from my attempt diversion. And then by the time I got back to it, I was like, oh, I guess that didn't really mean anything as far as like I couldn't do anything to impact that. Because
mm-hmm.
There was almost a mechanical nature of how I attacked certain things, is that I would kind of, after my deep obsession with Dark Bramble pretty early on, where I got to a point where I'm like, OK, I think I need to come back here as I'm trying to dodge all these fucking terrifying fish. I went to Timberhearth, or I went to Brittle Hollow. And then kind of was like, all right, let's just whittle down, do all the things in my ship log in Brittle Hollow. And then when I kind of reach a point where I'm hitting a wall or I've checked everything off, I'll go move on to Ash Twin and Ember Twin and then mm-hmm. Giant's Deep. And just kept on kind of doing that. And I don't know if that's like, this isn't a game where it seems like there's a wrong way to play it, but I feel like that might have been a less optimal way, because it was just like, I felt like I was kind of ruling things out by the process of elimination until I'm like, okay, I got to go focus on getting to the eye. And it was, I will say, Melanie, your hint of needing three things, I literally was on a hike and texted Melanie and was like, oh, it's that ship from Dark Bramble. Like, that's one of the things. Because I was like, all right, I have the coordinates. And like, I know where the warp core is. Like, what's the other thing that I need? And then that clicked into place. And then I was like, all right, that's what I got to do.
Yeah.
So what order did y'all find the ship, the coordinates, and the core?
Technically, I found the ship first, but I didn't know it was that important.
Okay.
I found the ship first when I had already kind of figured out the importance of the eye. Like, I didn't go to Dark Bramble at all until after I had... No, I found the coordinates first, actually. Now that I think about it.
That was the first thing I found, was the coordinates.
I found the coordinates first, and then I found the ship. And then it was just like, okay, I need a power supply for this.
Yeah, I avoided Dark Bramble for a long time because, once again, I'm deathly afraid of large underwater creatures, and Dark Bramble was, holy shit.
It scared the shit out of me. I basically like was going around and turned around. I was like, holy fuck.
So I was lucky enough that before I ever went to Dark Bramble, I had done all the stuff on Ember Twin that explains to you, oh, the anglerfish are blind.
That didn't help me, Melanie, because I can't read. I've already mentioned it to these folks, but I'll say for the podcast, my initial thought with the, and this is because I think my problem was that I was metagaming the anglerfish. So my thing was like, oh, okay, they attack the spaceship. Maybe I can send the spaceship in and like get it going towards, because you eventually hit a point in Dark Bramble where there's going to be three fish right at the entrance. Yeah. Like, you cannot go around them.
The fish dimension, as my sister called it.
Yeah.
Hate the fish dimension.
And so my thought was, okay, I'll just get the ship going in there and then I'll get out and follow it in, and they'll go after the ship, and I'll just go around them. They don't go after the ship, which should have been my clue, and instead they go after me.
Because the ship's not making any noise.
Right. Instead they go after me, but at that point, I'm just thinking, oh, it's because their AI, it's a video game, their AI is targeting me, not the ship. They don't know to go for the ship. Like, I immediately dismissed it from a just game mechanic standpoint. But I discovered, oh, if I'm pinned up against the wall outside of my ship, their model can't close its mouth. And so,
oh my God,
I could just scoot along the wall and they would just open mouths around me, but they could not close their mouths. And then eventually I would get into the vines. They would get stuck and they would give up. And then I would go to that weird floating red thing that I still don't know what it is.
That is their eggs.
Yeah.
Ew, gross. So I'd go over there, and by then my ship would have conveniently drifted right to about there. I'd hop back in and we'd sail off to the ship. I did this multiple times. Had it down.
Oh, no.
I was great at it. And that's why, so like, I'm like on my way to finish the game and I'm like, okay, I've solved the game.
You're doing this with the advanced warp core?
Hell yeah.
No.
And I'm like, I've got this all figured out. I'm just going to ask Melanie, like, this isn't the right way to do this. I'm going to ask what it is. And you explain it. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. As I'm like scooting along the wall with this thing. And I did eventually go back. I'm like, I want to try it. So I did eventually go back and do it.
My issue with that bit is the fish dimension. When you first enter in, like, you're faced with the two fish, and you see the antenna like right in front of you, and my instinct, even knowing that they're blind and will only react to audio, is to like just scoot, just like give myself a little push to get out of the way of the antenna, and that always triggers them. And so what I would do is I would back up out of the fish dimension, But it doesn't matter.
If that kicks you all the way out.
It doesn't matter because you get spat out into outer space, and then you go back into Dark Bramble, and you go back into the fish dimension. You go straight into their mouths. Like, they're still right there.
Their positions are maintained. Yeah.
Yeah. They never left. And so you just warp into your death.
Yeah. I also, my other strategy early on, my wife suggested this, was to launch the probe scout and see if I could get them to chase that. Which I think
I tried that
mechanically almost. I guess that thing isn't propelled the entire time.
Well, that's the thing. It's actually specifically not.
I feel like if I'm constantly taking pictures, so it's clicking, that they should chase it. But that would require this to be a good game, which obviously it's pretty poorly made.
Does clicking the shutter, does that make a sound?
I mean,
not
should.
For the purposes of the anglerfish.
Fish can't hear cameras. Little known fact about fish.
That is true. In real life, that is pretty true. I don't think a fish has ever heard a camera.
Yeah.
No living fish.
But yeah, Dark Bramble was probably the first mystery that I figured out, because I thought it was the most interesting. It was the most immediately engaging because there was an antagonist to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the first time I ran into the fish, it really spooked me, but I got used to it.
They scared me.
It's probably what helped start my anxiety about the game.
Yeah,
once you see a fish, you're like, what the fuck else is out there? And it turns out, like, oh, no,
nothing else.
That's it.
When my sister played the game, she went straight to Dark Bramble immediately. And, before she went to any other planet, she found Feldspar.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't... Did she do, like, the scout to track which one to go into to get to him? Or did she just wing
it? She noticed Feldspar's signal on the signal scope.
Right. But
how do you... You have to, like, get past the fish and not die.
And does it point to both, like, because there's the one bramble to get to him that's too small, and then there's the other one that's big. Does the signal scope point to both? Because I always use the probe into the little one, and then the signal from that would point me to the big one.
Yeah, it points to either of them.
Okay.
Oh.
And I'm looking at it now. You don't need to go through the fish dimension to get the Feldspar.
Oh, okay.
No, that's right. You have to go through the fish dimension to get to
the vessel.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, here is a map of Dark Bramble.
It's probably very simple. Okay, that's slightly more rooms than I thought, to be honest. Yeah, it's dark. It's very Lost Woods, Dark Bramble.
A little bit.
If Lost Woods was absolutely terrifying.
I love the phrase "lonely fish room."
That's sad. I'm sure he deserved something. He deserved to be ostracized.
All right. So, are we ready to talk about the ending?
Sure.
Sure.
Why not?
Okay.
I have no idea what happened.
No idea at all.
I think I became God.
I mean, it's accepting peace at the end of the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It is, and this is
the whole fucking game.
So this is where the very particular circumstances that I played this in, it was just a couple weeks after my 30th birthday when I started to have deep existential terror.
The old quarter life crisis.
Oh, yeah. This existential terror started right as I turned 30. I played Outer Wilds 3 weeks later, and this existential terror did not stop until I started taking estrogen.
The year-long existential terror.
At which point, immediately,
estrogen, the cure for Outer Wilds.
Yeah,
100%. But yeah, so the end of the game is all about the acceptance that the universe is ending and that there is nothing you can do to change that. So instead, we will make peace, we will be together, and we will witness the end. And at the time, I really hated that because that was not what I needed to hear when I was freaking the fuck out daily. But now I look at it and I think it is a beautiful ending, because I think that it takes this scenario that is supposed to be very hopeless. It is supposed to be something that feels terrifying. And it says it's okay. Mm-hmm. It says that the fact that we were here to be a part of it at all is something special. And that's, and again, Solanum has the best lines in the game.
Yeah.
When you talk to her here, her line there is, "This song is new to me, but I'm honored to be part of it."
So good. My favorite line in the entire game.
It's so good. It hits really hard.
Can I ruin this moment by telling you one part about the ending I absolutely hated?
Sure.
Uh-oh.
Is it the signal scope?
No, it's the absolutely unnecessary anglerfish jump scare during an otherwise totally peaceful moment. Like, everybody's just like, do, 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 like playing their happy little songs on their banjos. And you're like, yeah, I'm getting the band back together. Anglerfish, fuck! Like, it's, why does that happen? Like, it's so... The tone is so, like, everything's okay, except for right now. No, I'm just fucking with you. It's fine. Like, why did you do that to me? That was so mean.
I feel like entering the eye was a lot. Like, that was probably the most terrifying part of the game to me.
Oh,
there's, like, an unknowable. Like, all right.
Oh, the eye I was fine with. That didn't bother me at all.
Well, so I didn't think it was scary, but there was definitely this moment of, like, so first of all, like, as soon as you take out the warp core and leave Ash Twin, an arrangement of the end of loop theme starts playing.
Yeah.
And the arrangement just has so much tension to it and so much just this driving feeling of like, this is it. Like, after everything, we are ending this now.
And it builds as you, like, it knows where you are. Like, it knows when it's like, oh, they're going to Dark Brand. They know what they're doing. Like,
it
builds as you get each step closer. It's so good.
And I think, like, the way that the game builds all of that up does it so perfectly that when you're finally there, when you're seeing the eye of the universe for yourself, you kind of do feel that same sense of awe and wonder that the Nomai describe about it. And
they do a really good job.
It's this very powerful moment to me where at that moment, you truly do not know what's about to happen. And that's kind of what the eye of the universe is all about. It's, you know, it was this thing that just no one understood what it was, but it felt so important that they threw everything that they had away for the hope of a glimpse of it.
There's some cool stuff in the writing too, as you're picking up, like going through kind of like the timeline of the Nomai, where it starts out as like, what is that? We need to change course to see what that is. To they eventually crash and it becomes their god.
Yeah, like, their religion.
That you slowly see this shift into it being a religion, which I think is really well. It took me a second for that to click as like seeing that progression, but I thought that was so cool and so well done.
And again, the best stuff in the game is about Solanum. Outside of just meeting her on the Quantum Moon, she has some of like the written dialogue that you're translating throughout the game. And it starts out where she, when she was younger, does not trust the eye because she thinks of it just as like the thing that caused their vessel to crash and stranded them on Ember Twin and at Brittle Hollow and the third escape pod just being totally lost in Dark Bramble. And eventually she comes to make peace with it and starts to see that wonder in it that is conveyed so well in the storytelling that makes you feel it too. And that's part of how it all comes together perfectly for me in the ending. Especially like kind of where it takes a moment before you really, like you cycle through a couple things before you get to that bit where you're getting the band together, where it's really hammering home that this is the end. It's the moment in the museum too, where everything is now describing the past tense.
Yep.
And it's this moment of like, at first I kind of felt very upset by that, of how, oh, it really is the end of everything.
Yeah. We are not saving the solar system. It's over.
And then once you start getting everyone together to play that final song, then it all just starts to feel fine.
Yeah, it's all okay. Yeah.
And I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I think I really do now, where it's such a powerful statement that we're not going to get to be a part of this forever. It's going to go on without us someday, and someday everything that we were will be gone. And we spend a lot of time in real life worrying about, like, what's the point of it all? And I think that what this ending in this game is saying, and in something that speaks to me really well, is that the point isn't important. What's important is that we were here and that it meant something to us. And everything about this game I love. I love the entire game loop of it. I love all of the writing of it. And the fact that it ends like that, in a way that feels so perfect to me, is just kind of why this is and will always be one of my favorite games. And it feels really, really special to me.
Yeah, the going into the eye and feeling the overwhelming sense of almost dread. Like, my heartbeat was racing when I first entered, and I'm just experiencing just the soundscape of being lost, and, you know, all the quantum things happening where you're seeing parts of other bits of the planet of the solar system show up.
It's really cool effects.
Yeah, incredible. And, you know, it's finally paying off, because throughout the game, like, the most exciting thing to me was I can't wait to see the eye, this thing that is kind of unknowable, that's been around since before the universe was around. Like, I wonder what it is. How could they possibly pay it off? And they absolutely do. And it's just this this intense feeling of, like, I am overwhelmed by how enormous this is and how much I don't really understand it. And then it hits you that you are not going to save the solar system, that everything is in fact coming to an end. And, like, you are kind of starting another Big Bang, is my interpretation of what happens at the very end. And, you know, when you're coming across all the other travelers, and especially Solanum, it hits home how much the game was about, like, your curiosity, discovering that sense of how small you are within the vastness of a universe, and being a small part, you know, like, you're building on the past, you're fulfilling what the Nomai were searching out to do. Like, all the hard work was done by the Nomai, but your part of it was important. And being able to share that with the other Harthians and with Solanum especially felt very, very special. And then, of course, like, the very end, just coming to terms with the fact that at some point you are going to end and you are going to be replaced, but maybe even finding a little bit of hope in that replacement, that things are working out.
Plus, it makes room for Outer Wilds too.
Yeah.
In which you divert the comet and find out that none of it actually was worth it. And it's all fine.
There's always a girl. There's always a lighthouse.
Yeah. There's always a comet. There's always a
moon.
There's always a Judas.
And then there's not a moon, and then there is a moon, and then there's not a moon. Yeah.
it just oscillates back and forth.
There's always a girl, always a lighthouse, may or may not be a moon, depending on where you're looking and when.
It is, I mean, the ending did not have the same, I mean, I did not have life-affirming decisions spin out of Outer Wilds. So time will tell.
I wouldn't say that Outer Wilds caused them, but it certainly was a key part in the story.
But it is the kind of thing where, like, I see where that comes from, even if it didn't click for me, because it was that, like, oh, like, it's that acceptance part. Like, that's just a big thing overall that, I mean, not to, I feel like, Melanie, you bared your soul a little bit, so I'll do a little bit of mine too. But just, like, over the past, I don't know, 8 years, do the math, not to get too political. Over the past eight, it is, like, just that dealing with acceptance of, like, there are some things I have control over, there are some things that I do. A lot of things that I do have control over aren't really that big in the grand scheme of things, but I'm going to try to focus on the aspects of my life and the world around me that I can, you know, like, actually do things with, whether it's, you know, just, like, spend time with friends, play music together with my homies in the eye, or, or just, you know, like whatever moderate change I can, even if it's not going to start, it's not going to stop or save us from the inevitable heat death of the universe. And that is something where, like, I found that in like other media. I mean, I could go on an entire different podcast about why I got so deep into the world of, you know, ska and punk music. Is a lot of, I guess my quarter life or third life crisis. If you had your quarter life crisis, then I'm having my third life crisis of like that. I mean, that's why I got into that, because it is that like, oh, I'm just going to like enjoy this moment. Like, I can't control the shit outside of this room. Let's just have fun at a concert.
Something I've been thinking about, just because of the fact of the quantum moon and the time loop and all that, and the fact that it was my birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. I've been replaying Majora's Mask just because I guess I want to, you know, think a little bit more about my mortality. And I think these games are kind of interesting parallels to each other, where it's like Majora's Mask is kind of about...
Oh, I don't reckoning. Know if they have anything in common, really.
Yeah, no. Not much. I mean, one has a sword, the other one has a ship.
I don't think... Well, no, they have fish. They both have fish. Majora's Mask is kind of about like reckoning with your doom and how... just the human like exploration of grief and having to deal with the fact that like you're on a clock, and Outer Wilds is about the letting go of that fear and of that acceptance. And I think that both, you know, in tandem are fantastic games to play. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they're not, they play very differently, but emotionally they really resonate with me, and I think they make for a kind of fun double feature.
So are we about ready to close it out on this email we got?
Sure,
I think so.
All right, so our email from Mars Mage: I looked up a few solutions while playing Outer Wilds, and while it definitely didn't ruin the game, I regret doing so. What are your thoughts on persevering through puzzles in a game like Outer Wilds that only will give so much guidance and trusts the player to make deductions? Can a guide ruin the experience for you? Alternatively, would not looking something up and risking stalling out on a puzzle be an issue? I'm curious what external resources you used, if any. This is where I need to admit my dark shame.
Used a guide.
The very final thing that I needed to figure out in the game, I had to look up. I could not figure out how.
What did you look up?
I could not figure out how to get the warp pad for the Ash Twin working.
Hey, okay.
I will say there's a lot of fiddly stuff like that that I feel like, by the open-ended nature of the game, it is like very frustrating when you're like, I have this pedestal thing. What the fuck do I do with it? And it's like impossible to account for every way, because some of it depends on like, did you remember that thing you read over there? And some of it might be, oh, you might not have even found that thing over there to read. Sure. Yet.
Yeah. The ship log definitely helps a lot in this regard.
Yes, it does. If not for the ship log, I would have said, fuck this and not finish the game.
Mm-hmm. I stood at that Ash Twin portal with a 100% ship log going, how does this work?
And I love the bit in the NoClip documentary where the lead designer of the game is just like, sorry about the Ash Twin puzzle.
Yeah.
So what's the intended solution there?
So it's, well, okay, I can say where I got tripped up. You have the Ash Twin that has all the towers to the different places, and I immediately figured out that, okay, why there's a portal to Ash Twin on Ash Twin. That doesn't make sense. That must be the one that gets me inside Ash Twin.
Yeah.
Figured that out right away.
Yeah.
What I couldn't figure out was if I stood on that portal and waited for Ember Twin to be where it needed to be, I would just immediately get sucked through the ceiling by the sand thingy. And I had spotted the alcove in the corner, and I was like, maybe I can just time that right. But when I tried that, I guess I just didn't get the timing right or didn't step on the portal right, and it didn't work. So I was like, that must not be what I need to do. So I was stuck. And I actually DM'd Melanie, like, am I like it, the solution is on this planet, right? Like, I don't want to know what the solution is, but like, I'm in the right spot, right? And you confirmed that, and made some comments about, you know, really examine that area. And I'm like, I did. And then I just tried the alcove thing again. It worked the second time. And so for me, it was just I figured out what to do, but took a little bit of, you know, physics driven game jank as absolute law of game design and didn't try again. So partially my fault.
I do think with the fact that this game is as beloved as it is, and it's been, you know, more than 5 years since it came out, I found a pretty good, like, spoiler free hint guide where it's like almost like you just look up like, oh, you're in this area. Like, here's one hint. Here's another one. I'm not going to totally spell this out for you, but here's all the information that you need. Like, even for what was it? The Ghost Matter. That like kind of gave a hint for use the scout.
Yeah.
And that's like that was very helpful. And it is something
where
the
three hint coins in Professor Layton.
I mean, it more or less is that. And like, I can understand why this game does not have a feature like that. And I don't think it's necessarily like a major fault of it, but I do think that this game asks a lot of the player that is not like a lot of game. There are not many games that ask this much of the player in this specific way that I think it would benefit from.
No.
Yeah. But even still, like, there's, I mean, yeah, you do have Myst and the Myst likes of the day, but like, it's still, it's not a common game,
no.
Especially in modern gaming. It would benefit from some kind of like, you know, only if you're really stuck, here's a hint. But that's also coming from me reviewing games, especially a lot of collections of old games that like do nothing to help people out. And I really do feel like I wish that kind of stuff was built into games and not where I need to go online and go find a nice spoiler-free guide. But those do exist.
Not saying that I think like Outer Wilds does everything that it could, because I think it definitely could do
it. It does a really good job.
They're stuck. But yeah, it's like, it's so far beyond like most video games, honestly. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I will say, I bought the recent Riven remake right before we started this game club, took a break from it, and now I'm going back to it. What I will say for Outer Wilds is that at no point did I have to break out a notebook. Whereas when I mean, play,
depending on your perspective, that might be a drawback.
I love breaking out a notebook for a puzzle game, to be clear, but the log system they have essentially just wrote down everything that I would have written down, which is great. The one thing that I would maybe critique on it is that in the late game, I had trouble if I wanted to find all of my collected information on a certain topic. I'd kind of be like looking around like, where was that, and like, where would that, I wish it almost had like a search function or like a glossary
that would
where
probably
I could
help
be like,
yeah,
like, okay, I want to know everything I know about the anglerfish, put all of that in one thing and just list it, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, because when I was kind of hinting you towards that, like, the, you know, the answer to the anglerfish stuff is that Ember Twin. You kind of have, if you want to find that in the ship log, you need to know to look at Ember Twin,
right? It's that thing of like, the information's there. It does a really, like, the, you know, crazy like police crime board thing that it does to link everything together. It's really great when you're actively playing through those parts to kind of give you an idea of where there might be more information. But if you're going back somewhere and need to like review it, it's not as good for that. And that's where I had some, I think most of the things that I struggled with were finding things in there. But it is probably like the best implementation I've seen of something like that in a game like this.
Yeah,
it was very surprising. After I finished, I was just like looking at like Metacritic and to see like there are people where like it clicked with them clearly, but there were a lot more like, oh, this is like it's like too inscrutable, and like more sevens than I expected.
Honestly, I am that person for the DLC. I'm not enjoying the DLC, if I'm being honest. So
I've seen a lot of comments saying that the DLC is best if you played it alongside the base game. And it doesn't stand up as well on its own. But I don't know the context
of
that.
I don't think I agree with that.
Okay. But,
I think people want that to be true more than it is true. But
sure.
The DLC is like a whole other thing. So especially because like Neil and John, you haven't played it at all. Alex, you're not as far as I am in it. So you can't really talk about it. But I will just say I don't like the DLC, I think.
I've got it on my wish list, and if it ever gets really cheap, I might try it.
I'm curious, like, I guess it's hard to talk about without getting, but like, what, I mean, the base game is a transformational experience for you. Mm-hmm. How is the DLC kind of like not jiving with you?
In terms of like quality, it feels more like a fan-made mod.
Okay.
Including like some things are just missing. Some things from the base game just are not in the DLC.
Okay.
And
I feel like you can't talk any more specifically about that without getting into
Okay, so here's what I think is safe for me to say that is a substantial part of also why I don't like the DLC. When you download the DLC, the game then prompts you on the title screen to be like, would you like to reduce the frightening things in the DLC? And you're like, excuse me?
That's a bad.
I don't like this.
I think the answer is yes, and then I go delete the DLC.
Yeah.
So
John is removing it from his wish list. I'm like, we speak.
It was already a horror game. What are you?
So I don't like the direction they took the DLC. But yeah. As far as specifically Mars Mage was kind of asking about, like, do we think like a guide would ruin, like, looking up stuff, do we think that ruins the game? And I would say that I think this game is best done with you doing that as little as possible. But I'm not like, I think the ideal way to do this is to never look up anything. But I do know that that's not realistically possible for everyone. So I think that the best way to do this is never looking up anything. The second best way is whatever it takes to get you to credits.
Yeah, I think if I would agree that when I'm playing games like this, I really push myself to never look anything up. If you do get to a point where it's between looking it up or just not playing the game anymore because you're no longer having a good time, look it up.
Look it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There will be more puzzles. And odds are, I mean, like Neil, you were saying, you can find guides that won't tell you. Like, there have been things in games like this where, like, I don't want to know the solution. I just want to know that I'm looking in the right direction. Right.
Yeah.
Which is like, those were all like every question that I asked you, but like I asked you about whether the quantum moon was important and whether the Ash Twin was where I was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And both of those questions were just like, am I going the right way? I don't want to know the answer to the puzzle. I just want to know that I am in fact at the puzzle.
I remember, this is related to a game that probably maybe someday I will force a game club like this upon all of you, but it's like a 80 hour game. Chrono Cross, when I initially tried to play that game,
I don't think any of us have like said this out loud yet, but I'm totally cool with like this just like looping through the four of us over and over.
I assume that's what we're doing. Like,
yeah,
like,
we haven't planned past the first loop, but I'm totally fine with it going past.
Yeah,
that.
Every 22 minutes we'll do four new games.
We just play Outer Wilds again. It's the same four games.
But with Chrono Cross, like, it's a game where the hook with that game is that there's like, you know, 40 characters that you can pick from. And
that's a lot.
It was another game, but like, there's branching paths into who you can get at different times. Like, there's a lot more to it. It's not like, I don't know if there's ever, until like the late game, like the parties are kind of split up in some respects, and there's ones that like, if you choose this one, you lock yourself out of another one. I wound up finding a guide, and to date this, I printed it out at my local library. But it was a guide that was basically just that, like, listen, we're not going to tell you about like dungeon solutions or like puzzle stuff. It's just like, if you go to this town at this time, that character will be able to get you. You will be able to get that character then. If you don't do it, then you'll be locked out of it. And like, that was something that helped me just actually get through that game. Because when I initially first played it, like, it kind of just overwhelmed me where I'm like, oh, there's all these decisions to make. I feel like talking about some of these where I had like anxiety over Majora's Mask and getting characters in Chrono Cross. Maybe I should have figured out that I have anxiety way earlier in life. But it was something where like a guide helped me go through that experience, and it wasn't a spoiler ridden guide. And I would consider Chrono Cross one of my favorite games of all time. And that's kind of why I look at it with Outer Wilds, that it is that, yeah, try to do what you can. I don't regret any of the, you know, spoiler free like hint stuff that I found. And I think that that would be the best route to go in if you are playing through this game and get stuck.
Mm-hmm. I think the best way to do it is just to. Is to have a friend who's already played it give you hints. That's
find your ideal. Melanie.
Yeah, get a Melanie to figure out the jellyfish.
I will come up with 3 hint coins for anything in that game.
Because Melanie was actually really helpful in helping me like get out of thinking about the jellyfish wrong. I was like trying to go to the island with the jellyfish on it.
Okay, well, in fairness, you also had figured it out.
Yeah.
But just like because of the specific way the game was programmed, thought that it was wrong.
Yeah.
Like, by the way, I don't think we talked about the jellyfish at any point, but I just wanted to say like one of the funniest ways I figured out anything in this game was like I took one look at the jellyfish and like my mind went back to Finding Nemo and I just said anemone and like I instantly figured out what to do.
Oh, that's hilarious.
it just looked like Finding Nemo to me.
My one giant steep thing that I forgot to mention was, depending on which jellyfish you take into the core, you can be positioned when you get spit out so that the probe chunk that's down there, you just see the edge of it, which is in the exact shape of an eyeball in a dark room. And so I came out of that jellyfish with a fear of the ocean and giant underwater creatures. I popped out of that jellyfish and there was a building-sized eyeball in a dark void. And I, as a grown man, sitting on my couch next to my wife, yelped. Like, verbally screamed.
Love it.
And was terrified. And she's just like, you thought that was an eyeball, didn't you? And I was like, yes. It was so... And I'm like, they must have positioned that jellyfish on purpose. There's no way that nobody making this game saw the same thing I just saw.
That's so funny.
Oh, it was horrible. And I had spent, once again, Giants Deep, one planet on the game that has an ocean that already just kind of made me anxious, even though there's nothing else scary on that island, on that planet.
I did have, because I saw the anglerfish in Dark Bramble first.
Yeah.
I was expecting something on Giants Deep.
There'd be stuff down there. Yeah.
And, it was a relief that there wasn't, but yeah, I was like, at any turn.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway. Just had to add that in.
All right. I think that about wraps it up then, unless we have any last things we want to say.
I just want to say the Tower of Quantum Imaging was one of my favorite parts, just mechanically. I wish there were more almost... It was the only part that felt like kind of video gamey, where you're going through these different rooms and solving the puzzles. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that was cool.
I wish there was more of that. I felt like
mechanically... It was a change of pace.
The game was... A little lacking, like outside of the flying around and managing the gravity and the fuel.
I just realized I have not said this yet. This game has my favorite space flight physics of any video game ever. Like, I love controlling the ship in this game.
I love that. So before I'd ever played this, you had told me like that just the feel of this game is just unlike anything else. And it's incredible. And I was like, oh, OK, cool. And then, like, I got in the ship and was like, yeah, cool, this controls great. And I was like, I said something to you to the extent of like, yeah, the ship control is great, but I assume when you say you're looking for more games that control like that, it's the entire Outer Worlds experience, not just that. And you were like, no, it's kind of just that. I'm like, oh,
Outer Wilds.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I would love more games like Outer Wilds in general, but like there are other games like that exist, and I've never played a game that gives me like the same feeling I do.
Yeah, I suspect I can give you other games that play like the two different parts of Outer Wilds. Mm-hmm. I can give you games that have the directionless solve the universe element.
Metroidbranias.
Metroidbranias, thank you. And games that have spaceships that control like that. I cannot find you another Mist in Space.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's literally like I boot this game up and I do trench runs on Ember Twin just to have a reason to fly that ship.
I had a lot of fun shooting the scout like off of Ash Twin through the trench and trying to get it to kind of loop around and like see how long I could get it stuck in a gravity loop between those two.
Yeah, I guess all I'll say about the mechanics is that the only things that like felt fun were the flying around and managing fuel, and then I guess everything else is just kind of like you point at a thing and then you read text or you move a ball around sometimes. And so I appreciated the Tower of Quantum Imaging for kind of like giving you some other things to do.
Yeah.
It would have been really cool if that was more a part of the game. Mm-hmm. Like one of my main complaints.
One cool ball thing that I noticed, because as you said, moving ball mechanics are a primary element of the game design. When you're in the Ash Twin project, the one to shut it down stops and makes you think about it. Like, it's the one ball where you can't just move it from the beginning of the track to the end. You get halfway through, it forces it to stop and really make you think about what you're doing before it lets you go the rest of the way. Like, you have to reacquire it and go back up, which I thought was funny.
All right. Well, then, I believe we decided that our next game will be John's, right?
Yes. So this is going to be the most jarring experience from arguably like a, you know, kind of a game of the year style experience, like
game of the
decade,
game of the millennium.
Yeah. Game that has lasting effects on people.
Yeah.
To Record.
Which the lasting effect that Record had is that it came out and everybody forgot about it.
Yep. But here's my pitch for Record, because I believe it has like a 60 on Metacritic. I believe it is the lowest rated game of our selections.
It has a 58.
I was going to round up. This is a game from Armature Studios, which was founded by a bunch of ex-Retro Studios devs who wanted to not be abused while making games. So they left Retro. And it is them.
Sorry.
It's them and Kenji Inafune, the Mega Man dude.
The disgraced Mega Man dude who I believe might be working on Fantasy Life.
He's got a great reputation nowadays.
He does. But what they wound up making was Metroid Prime meets Zelda meets Mega Man Legends. And it's a fantastic game that you can actually tell while playing it exactly when Microsoft stopped funding it.
It is honestly like, this is a rare combo where this is a John Ash John game and I'm also there with him in that I think this game kind of sucks, but I also really like it. But it is hilarious when you're just like, oh, Xbox gave up.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's really great up to that point.
Like, yeah.
It's really solid. And then they just... So we've talked about, like, when we talked about Xenoblade 3, how we know games aren't actually made in order, but you could feel when they were running out of time at the end of Xenoblade 3.
Yeah.
That is exactly how where Record is gonna like, wow, this is really great. I really like where this is going. Oh.
And it's, can you tell me how much of the pie chart that is the runtime of this game is shit?
It's here's what I'll say. It's not that the game gets bad. It's that the story kind of stops and it just says, we need you. Okay, the Triforce hunt in Wind Waker. You know when that happens and
yeah,
you're just
that's
like,
my favorite part of the game.
The game just sort of stops. The story is no longer progressing until I do all of this stuff. That's sure. kind of what happens, but to a larger degree. Okay. I would say it is yep. significantly more than halfway through the game. So like there's still plenty to enjoy. And then the story picks back up afterwards.
I forget. What did the DLC add?
It added an extra dungeon, which there's does DLC? Alleviate.
There's DLC?
It was a free update. I don't even know if I would call it DLC. It just
shows up. I just remember that I did not play the update.
I assume it's bundled into Steam's definitive edition.
It's bundled into every. You cannot get the game without it.
Okay.
Because it was just a patch. It was essentially a dungeon and robot that were cut for time from the original release. You have to remember this game came out at a time where Xbox literally had no exclusives ever, and they shoved it out the door. The DLC does help because this game operates on sort of almost a, like a Mario 64, like stars to unlock doors kind of thing. And so the DLC gives you much more easy access to some late game stars that does make that rough middle portion where you're kind of just trying to grind for stuff much better. Anyway, it's a great game, has a really good soundtrack.
Less than 20 hours.
It's not long, yeah.
Inafune is a producer on the Fantasy Life game coming out in October. And also, this is me, the ignorant Nintendo writer, did not realize that, like, Fantasy Life is kind of has a lot of shitty reception. that game on 3DS is one of my favorite games on 3DS. And I'm just looking at it, it's like, there's a 5.5, there's a 5 out of 10.
I believe we discovered this came out the same year as Mighty No. 9.
Yeah.
Bad year.
I forgive Inafune for Mighty No. 9. This game, like, for all the crap that I'm giving it, it's one of those games where you can tell, like, there was a whole lot of passion put into it for probably very little money. It is not Outer Wilds. This will not change your life. But I think it has some really cool, unique game design. A lot of little Metroid and Zelda and Mega Man influences that I think are really cool. It's just neat.
And I do think it's one of those things where you can see a little bit of the Metroid Prime origins of some of the leads.
Oh, 100%. There's a lot of Metroid Prime in this game.
I brought up Armature's, like, history, and I think it might be one of their only games that really is just that, like, hey, remember how we made Metroid Prime games?
They did do that. They made the 2D, the Batman Arkham Blackgate
game. I'm
not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's another yeah. Metroid game.
It exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does show Metroid influence.
Yeah. Last thing they did, I never played they did the VR port of Resident Evil 4, which I've always wanted to check out. I think now they kind of just do VR games.
Yeah.
Their last original game was Where the Heart Leads. Has anybody played that?
I have not played that.
No. They did do the port of Duck Game to Switch, which is a great port.
Well, there you go.
I'm also going to throw this out there, because y'all talked about how you like notebooks. My pick is currently Paper Mario Color Splash. I could be argued to make it Fez if y'all want to break out some notebooks.
Oh, no.
Well, I did. Boy, we could have made this just a horrible series of puzzle games, because after Outer Wilds, I seriously debated making my pick Myst, but I stuck with ReCore. I'll do Myst on the next loop.
We can only have one notebook game per cycle.
Well, that's the thing. I didn't have to use my notebook for Outer Wilds, so it didn't count.
Ah. So yeah, we'll do a coin flip for Fez or Myst in round two.
Yeah, be great. I think you might hate Myst, but I think you might also love it. I'm not sure which way it would go, but it's gonna be extreme either way.
I need to come up with some swerve for, like, what's my pick for the second loop now?
Yeah, I need you need to pick worse games.
Can it not be Near Replicant?
Crap.
and not being irrelevant. You don't want, you don't want to go to the junk heap again, Alex?
No, please, for the love of God.
I love how I basically heard
time for
like
daily junk heap.
I've heard for like almost a decade about how Nier is incredible, and now I feel like just the past month it's just been like, fuck this game, fuck this series.
Oh no, Nier Replicant is incredible, Neil. Don't play it.
No, okay,
that's
okay.
Exactly what I'm saying.
To go back to an H Bomber guy quote about Pathologic, it's not a bad game. It's an amazing game, but it's also a bad game. All right, so that is going to wrap it up then. So if you would like to participate and play ReCore along with us, I'm not sure why, and you should probably seek therapy, but you can play along. We will be recording our episode in roughly 1 month, so you can send us any emails about the game to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. I really deeply wonder if we will get any. But
I know there are people in the NWR community that have played ReCore.
All right.
It, then it does have perfect. Significant, despite not being on a Nintendo system, it has deep Nintendo ties.
That's perfect then. That's good. All right. Then that's going to wrap it up, everyone. So we will see you next month for our discussion on ReCore.